Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's The Bullpen, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5, Hour 2 of The Bullpen, and we continue the Astros conversation. If you have any thoughts on the biggest questions for the Astros' upcoming season, pitchers and catchers report in 16 days, give us a call on the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. You can find us all on Twitter. Sean is at Sean A. Mapes. Andrew's at Carlson Radio. I'm at Sack by BMAC. And our man Johnny behind the glass is at Third Coast Johnny. So we got to Carlos Correa questions on the list of the biggest Astros questions in segment one. Now we go to Alex Bregman. I'm not sure if we'll get beyond that, but we'll see how it goes. And honestly, we probably
can we get to George Springer number?
That is what I strive to get to. We will see. So number two on the biggest questions for the Astros, and it's staying kind of in the same topic, but it's a little bit different because obviously these guys are far less proven or have more question marks. But can Hunter Brown, J.P. France, and Jose Urquidy solidify the back end of the rotation until, knock on wood, cross your fingers, whatever you want to do, Luis Garcia gets back in June, and Lance McCullers Jr. just sometime before the end of the season, hopefully.
Magically appears and starts pitching again.
So, I mean, certainly if knock on wood, everything goes, you know, the best it possibly could, you actually get Garcia and Lance back, let's say All-Star break, you're probably feeling fairly good about the rotation until they break down again. Yeah. But until that point, we saw J.P. France, it feels like every week we had to ask the question, when's the shoe going to drop? And then it finally did. Hunter Brown, he was spotty. Kind of had the same season of Christian Javier, has some really dominant moments against like the A's, but there was a lot of bad games mixed in there as well. And then Jose Urquidy had his moments, but you never know when his shoulder's going to blow up. So where's your confidence in the back end of the rotation after Verlander, Fromber, and Javier?
So this is where it becomes a question of what your actual expectations are and your confidence that they can meet the expectations of just being the third, fourth, and fifth starter of a baseball team or of a Houston Astros team, or if we hold them to the standard of what, like you mentioned, this is the starting rotation with the most question marks of coming into any of season of this Astros run. It's like, well, we're not holding him to like the 2018 or 19.
No,
team
certainly
standards.
Not. Certainly like, not. Are we holding to even Brad Peacock levels? That'd probably be on Brad Peacock.
Yeah,
levels.
Yeah. If they could produce Brad Peacock level results, I think, or if I would want a little bit more out of Hunter Brown. I would say, Hunter Brown, I think, is dealing with
especially
a different.
If you got the nickname of Diesel. You can't be just a guy.
Such a good take.
You can't be just a guy if your nickname's Diesel.
Yeah, and when you're having the overlays of you and Justin Verlander next to
each other.
You
can't be just a guy.
Hey, I hate to break to you, but Justin Verlander, let me tell you, hop on my knee and let me tell you about an MVP winning pitcher, all right? Justin Verlander. So I think that Hunter Brown, I do have confidence in him just because of the talent that he has and this being his second year starting as opposed to being a rookie, he qualified as a rookie.
Yeah, he only had two starts the year before. Yes. He was still a rookie.
Yeah, so this, you hope that there's just a natural ascent, he got to work on his game. He knows what you can and can't get away with on a big league mound. So I do expect more out of him. The other two, France and Urquidy, you're just kind of hoping for, we talked about Brad Peacock level of production. maybe be better than Brandon Bielak and Ronel Garcia.
Yeah. I mean, France and Urquidy are really in the class of...
And I think they can. I think they can. I'm just not sure how much confidence I have with Urquidy's shoulder issues.
A lot of these guys are guys you're glad that the bullpen got, you know...
So awesome.
So yeah. Awesome, because there's going to be some games where you don't know how deep, you know, a lot of these guys are going
to
go.
Just get us to 5 or 6.
Where is your confidence with these guys, Andrew?
Not incredibly high. I feel like you know what you're going to get from Jose Urquidy as long as, like you mentioned, BMAC, he is healthy. He is who he is. He's going to be a fourth or fifth back end of the rotation starter, and he's going to be able to eat some innings as long as that shoulder stays healthy, and he's going to do so with a high 3, maybe just creeping ever so slightly into the 4 ERA. Like, that's just who Jose Urquidy is, and if he can do that, I will be more than happy with that. My questions honestly lie more with Hunter Brown and J.P. France, because J.P. France, let's say it like it is, he was a revelation in the Astros rotation last season, and expecting him to be who he was last season after putting way more innings on his arm than he has ever dealt with previously, I'm going to be extremely interested to see how his body responds and how he responds as a pitcher now that teams have had plenty of a chance to look at him, his stuff, and how he works. And because it's not like he blows you away with anything, right? It's not like there's anything in J.P. France's package as a pitcher to where he's like, oh, this guy just – he blows you away with his stuff or his velocity or anything else. He was just a very crafty pitcher. And look, sometimes those guys are able to carve out extremely long careers. Other times they're a one-season wonder, sort of a flash in the pan, because – the minute something goes awry with whatever it is that they're doing, they're not able to really adjust and respond. So I'll be interested to see what J.P. France puts out. And then Hunter Brown, he has all the potential in the world.
Is he the biggest question mark on the team right now? Because of the difference in the variance in his, like, if he hits his highest of highs,
yeah.
You know, holy crap.
Yeah.
This Astros rotation goes from biggest question marks to maybe the strength of the team versus the low end, what we saw in some of the games down the stretch where you really couldn't rely on him all. He wasn't pitching any better than J.P. France. Then that opens up a whole new list of questions about this back end of the rotation.
I still think Christian Javier is probably the biggest question mark, just because we know what he can be. And then what he was last season was so far from that. Like, you're just praying for some sort of regression back to, or progression, I guess, in this case, back to who he was.
Positive regression.
Positive regression. That's progression, right?
It is. But it's more fun to say positive regression.
But, yeah, like, Hunter Brown, if he can be who Astros fans sort of hyped him up to be after his first, like, what, 7 or 8 starts last season, where we were talking about, oh, he's going to win Rookie of the Year, and he's going to be a Cy Young candidate in a couple years. And then all of a sudden, he started turning into a contact pitcher, and his ERA ballooned the rest of the season. I'm interested to see what sort of development he has made, because we know that the stuff is there, but the command was not consistently there for the majority of the season. And then he's, like I mentioned just a second ago, he sort of willingly turned himself into a contact pitcher as the season went on last year. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, because Justin Verlander's become a bit of a contact pitcher.
Roy Oswalt was always a contact
pitcher. But like, if you can do it well, you're someone who can go deep into games because you're able to manage your pitch count, because you're not consistently just trying to miss bats over and over and over again. And that's just a difficult way to be an economic pitcher when it comes to your pitch count. So I'm hopeful that the underlying statistics would say that Hunter Brown is due for a bounce back, because I think he was one of the unluckiest pitchers if you go through the advanced metrics of like batting average on balls in play and expected batting average against stuff. But at the same time, he also gave up way too much hard contact for my liking. So even if he was being unlucky with sort of where the balls landed, people were still barreling him up way too much. So I'm interested to see what sort of progression he can make in his development as a pitcher in terms of, okay, how is he striking that balance between missing bats and then pitching to contact a little bit? And if he finds the right mix, that unlocks a whole new level for what this Astros team can be this season.
I'm fairly confident in Hunter Brown, because when you look at his minor league track record, that last season in Sugarland, I mean, he was basically the Justin Verlander of AAA. Like he won the ERA crown in the Pacific Coast League by more than a full run. He just lapped the field. But when you look at his year by year, it wasn't like he's always been at that level. There was a gradual progression to get to that point. So I do think we could see the same sort of thing. the gradual progression from good pitcher to, you know, better pitcher to eventually getting up to the Hunter Brown that we hope to see.
To earning the Diesel nickname.
To earning the Diesel nickname. But on the downside of that is, if he goes through, let's say, goes through all of 2024, basically repeats 2023, then you might hear people start to talk about or start to enter into the conversation the idea of, could he be in the bullpen? That's kind of what Hunter Brown's dealing with, because we saw even in starts where he got blown up, he'd have one or two innings at the beginning where he was lights out, no one could touch him. Third inning comes around, boom, five runs are on the board.
Yeah, that's going to be – this might be the year that defines what Hunter Brown is for the remainder of his time as an Astro, is whether or not – because once you get Lance McCullers and Luis Garcia back, like, you are going to have a wealth of options, hopefully, in the starting rotation. And a couple of these guys are going to get pushed to the pen. Hunter Brown might find himself on that chopping block if he does not improve from where he was last season.
Quickly, before we get into the break, we'll get to our third question. We're not going to quite make it to George Springer.
That's all right.
Sean, your favorite number three for the Houston Astros?
Hold on, let me
put it on you because I can't remember one.
Let me think, I mean pull up the Brian McTaggart article where he listed them all.
Number three, as you're looking up, is
Phil Garner.
Phil Garner, okay, there
as
we go.
Player.
That's a good one.
Scrap Iron.
That's a good, yeah, Scrap
Iron. Scrap
that
iron.
Is a good nickname. That is a good name.
And he earned it.
Yes, exactly. He has a World Series title. Not with the Astros, but third one on this list, I think the biggest question with the lineup in the defensive alignment is you didn't really do anything in the outfield. There's still time left. The free agency market has moved at, you know, a glacier pace. But right now you're looking at, obviously, Kyle Tucker in right field, Yordan's your DH, and I'm guessing it's going to be Chaz in left and Jake Myers in center. Maybe not confidence meter, so let's switch it to panic meter. Like, what is your panic on having, like, Jake Myers at, what was it, 2 years ago, 2021 season, where he looked pretty good, and then he had the injury, and he's had a few moments, but he's never really looked quite right, both at the plate and with his arm in the outfield. If Jake Myers, and Dana Brown has said earlier in the offseason that Jake Myers is going to get the chance to be the center fielder, so if we take him at his word, what is your level of concern, your panic meter, on Jake Myers being the everyday center fielder?
Probably.
I mean, let me make one more argument to this.
Okay.
And I'll let you finish. Sorry, I cut you
off
there.
I took the gun out of my mouth.
but someone made the point that because of inserting Yonder Diaz into the lineup, that basically Jake Myers is your new Maldi. Now, it's a different position, but as far as having one hitter at the ninth spot that you couldn't trust at all, nothing has really changed. Do you buy that, and what is your panic level on Jake Myers?
Well, that teaches you that life is all about perspective, because now I feel a little bit better about Jake Myers if I'm holding him to the Maldi standard. But I think it's still – my concern level is probably a 6 with it, because the best-case scenario that you can make for it is that – he will only be if it goes terribly, that they'll either call someone up, move Chaz to center, and then have a Jolks back in left, or one of their
man, that doesn't make me feel better.
Some of their youth in left field.
Go Cougs,
or they're setting up for a deadline trade. And it's like that is probably about as bad as it can go, is come June, July, when we're doing what do the Astros need at the trade deadline? It's replace
Spoiler
Jake
alert.
Myers. And so that if that's what the worst case scenario is, it can't really, for me, get to a 9 or 10 level, like,
sure,
oh my God, this team's bleeped. It's, you know, a 6 where it's, I am concerned. I don't expect this to go well, but ultimately I don't think this is going to be
a huge deal. It and move on.
It's a very fixable problem.
Yeah. I think I'm a little less concerned than Sean, just because of the fact, like what you mentioned, B-Mac, we got Maldi with speed.
You know what? Maybe I'm underrating that. Maybe I'm underrating Maldi with speed.
And, you know, if he's someone...
He's better than Maldi, by the way, looking at his numbers.
Yeah, no, I know that he is. But the front office's infatuation with Jake Myers, just, it amazes me. Because everything that he has put out as a major league player for the last couple of seasons just would tell you that he's not that dude anymore. And as great as he was for that stretch when he first broke into the major leagues, there has been, outside of maybe a couple of weeks last season where he got a little hot, there have basically just been zero signs that that guy is ever coming back as a major league player. And that sucks, and it's really sad because we thought that he was going to be the future of center field at some point before he ran into that wall out in Chicago. But that happens, and we're here now. And I just hope that at some point, if it is not working, the experiment comes to an end, and we're not stuck with saying, hey, we believe in Jake Meyer, so you know what? We're just going to keep trotting him out there because we think the talent's still in there. At some point, I would hope that if he is continuing to not perform, this front office would realize that, hey, it's not going to change. Things aren't going to turn around. We're just going to bite the bullet and we're going to move on. Will that happen? I don't know. But I hope that we don't have to go through an entire season of trying to find out because the front office believes in him.
Yeah, I think I'm at 8 for now, and I'll make this real quick because we got to get to break. I think I'm at 8 for now, but I share Sean's belief that it's an 8 for a couple months, and then they're going to – I have faith that Jake can be bad enough for them to realize they need to move on.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's a mean way to phrase it, but I have faith that he'll be poor enough that they'll know they have to move on by the time we get to middle June, early July. Next on the bullpen, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5, the lead-in to Mount Rushmore plus one. We're going to talk a little Rockets with Alperen Şengün's appearance on JJ Redick's podcast, The Old Man in the Three. Had an interesting comment about playing for Ime Udoka and had me wondering about who is kind of the Ime Udoka guy. Like, who can live up and deal with that style of hard coaching, that tough defensive mindset style of coaching? Certainly, I think Şengün can. He said you'll hear him say so when we get back. But who else on the team will be able to thrive in that system? That and more when the bullpen returns on ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5 on YouTube. Dracula Flow.
I'm Dracula. I'm 12 million years old. I have more perks than there are stars in the Leo cluster.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's... Man, is this another one of those super long rejoins? There's like five lines of text here before you even find out what the show is. Not sure if this is a good use of our time, man. Hold on a second. Look, I'm going to edit this a little bit and save us all some time, okay? It's the Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Great work there by Spencer editing himself and getting that that rejoin in a timely manner. ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5. Three more segments here left on the Bullpen today. We got Mount Rushmore plus one coming up next segment. Of course, we will finish the show with the things we love from sports and the worst people in sports this week. But right now, we're going to talk a little Rockets, and specifically with Alperen Şengün's appearance on JJ Redick's podcast, The Old Man of Three. This first clip you're about to hear from Alperen Şengün was when JJ talked to him about Ime Udoka's coaching style. I said it again, didn't I?
Ime
Udoka's. Belmer's got a big grin back there. Ime Udoka's coaching style, how tough he can be on his players, and if Şengün likes that style of coaching.
Every, like, all game, he talks, like, he's screaming.
Do you feel like he's hard on you?
Yeah, but I love it.
You love it?
Yeah, I love it. I love it a lot. And I
Why?
Was, I mean, where I grew up, I mean, in Europe.
It's normal.
It's like, yeah, still Ime is so hard on me, but I can say there's nothing, you know, like, I mean, Ime is not cursing them. Like, I mean, he cursed, but not that bad, you know, in Turkey, that was like bad voices, cursing, screaming, like.
That's every coach you played for in Turkey. Pretty much.
When I was 18, I was already grew up. So I wasn't like, you know.
It didn't affect you.
Yeah,
at that point.
It didn't affect me at that point. But when when I was a kid, actually, it didn't affect me either. I saw a lot of things like, you know, if you're like good player in your team, you have to take all that things and like all the coaches are coming at you, you know, no matter what, you are a good boy.
So even when you were a kid and a teenager, you didn't take any of that personally?
No.
Alperen Şengün hardened by the age of 18. Right off the bat, that caught my attention. But it got me to thinking about the Rockets under Udoka, and which players, certainly it seems Şengün, hardened in the streets by the age of 18 in Turkey, can deal with his style of coaching and seemingly thrive in. He's having the best season of his career so far. But I'm not so sure about every other Rocket on this team. Obviously, probably the first name that will come up in this conversation is Jalen Green, but I'm sure it goes beyond that for you guys. when you hear those comments from Şengün about Udoka and him thriving in that tough style play, are there any names on this team when you're looking forward, kind of like the old is he a Bill Parcells guy conversation? Are there guys on this team you worry about maybe not able to handle that style of coaching and could be on their way out once Udoka gets a full season to look at how he handles his style of coaching?
Everyone who's not from Turkey is immediately a suspect. If you're not from Istanbul, you're not Istanbuli, then...
Oh, wow.
Is Şengün from Istanbul?
I don't know. It's the only place in Turkey I can name, all right? I mean, the easiest way is to go with the Ime guys, who you think the guys are, and that would be mostly the veterans. You would think that it's
guys they signed as free agents,
yeah,
too.
It's the Fred VanVleet's,
Dylan Brooks.
Dylan Brooks. Jeff Green, because he loves playing Jeff Green, so I imagine he...
like 30 minutes a night.
Yeah, I'm always shocked how much Jeff Green... He's good, but I'm always surprised that he's 39 years old.
Love a little bit between him and Cam Whitmore, please.
Yeah. Just, wow, give him some rest. He's an old man, please. His nickname is Uncle. You know, there's never a young guy with the nickname Uncle, your first name. But, I mean, you do worry about the young guys kind of, you know, sinking or swimming, as you worry about with any kind of this is a little bit different. You worry about if they can sink or swim as far as their skills in the NBA. This is more about their mentality. But if they can't swim with the hard coaching, you feel good about what the mental side of their game is. And so I don't really have any worries about Jabari Smith. He seems like he's a guy who's responded well. And this is all just from the outside, just watching the games and who seems like they respond well to that kind of coaching. I'd say Jabari Smith is kind of past the body language and the just kind of watching the games test as far as that goes. The rookies is too early to tell, you know?
What about a guy like Tari Eason?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, 100%. 100%. 100% Dylan, or
Udoka guy?
Kind of guy, yes.
Andrew, you feel worried about any of these young guys and their future about being able to handle this style of coaching?
Not really, because if they can't handle it, then they don't necessarily belong on this team or in the league. So it's going to very much be a survival of the fittest type atmosphere where if you can't shape up and shape it like and become a part of the collective, then you're just not going to have a place on the team. And the Rockets will move on and improve without you, and that's fine.
Kelvin Sampson mentality right here. That is the Kelvin Sampson coaching tree.
Shape up or ship out.
Right here. I can't teach you to be tough. Give me tough players, and I can teach them how to play basketball. That's what Andrew Carlson just said.
Yeah, well, teach them how to play hard, and then once they figure that out, then they
teach
can
them how to hit
play
those
basketball.
Unders.
Yeah, exactly.
I think
everyone is okay with getting coached hard for some amount of time, and then you get sick of it.
Yeah, like, no. I'm sure there's the guys that appreciate Belichick early on.
Yeah,
and then after they were there for 5 years, like, you know
what?
Stop
yelling at me, all right?
Back off, dude. Yeah. So it'll be interesting because we obviously spent some of the season talking about, hey, can they make the playing game? Can they do this or that? But really this season is about, I think, finding who their future guys are. And I think that's a part of the process about who can deal with the style of coaching and who can't. This next clip from Şengün is JJ's asking him about kind of what the nickname that everyone calls him, the baby Joker gimmick that he's had put upon him. Does he like it? Does he think that's fair? Let's hear from Alperen Şengün right now.
You know, the mini Jokic thing. Does the Jokic comparison, does that bother you?
I mean, no.
No.
No. Not for now, you know, still young, but after some point, yeah.
Do you feel like it's a pretty big compliment?
I mean, yeah, they mean like my game is similar to him.
Yeah.
Is it true though? You know, we kind of play.
Yeah.
Same game. It was when they were telling me first time I came here, yeah, you know, it was sounds better and like sounds better, but getting like, you know, getting your own space now in NBA, you know, on your spot. So, of course, when he got retired or something, when he got old and I'm going to some age, you know, I don't want people tell me the like, me, baby Jokic, you know.
Right. Right.
Some point,
right now it's fine.
Like, yeah. Right now it's fine. I'm like a baby, but like when I grow up, I don't want to hear that.
Yeah, Alpy doesn't want to be called a baby Jokic when he's 30 and he's a grizzled vet.
Yeah, he wants to be called Uncle Alpy.
Uncle Alpy, exactly. So he wants to progress in that. But Maybe this is kind of me remembering like some of the people that would have baby Jordan thrown them. Like shout out to Harold Miner. So I don't entirely love. I get the similarities. They do share a similar style ball. They're big men. They're not from this country. There's a lot of things that line up as similarities between Alpi and Nikola Jokic. But I don't know. Like putting baby Joker on him is such a high bar when you look at Alpi. Like Alpi's numbers this year, best of his career, 21 points a game, 9 rebounds.
Yeah.
I believe just under nine assists. He's at 5 assists a game. Sorry, that's Jokic. Whereas Jokic, when you look at the last 4 years, including this year, he's at 26 points, 12 rebounds, damn near 9 assists. I mean, it's such a high bar. And then obviously you throw in the winning the championship
two
last
MVPs
year.
And
it feels like we're putting a very, very unfair, crazy high bar on Alpi. Like, he could get to a level, I think, where he could be the best player on a contending team. But putting Jokic when he's 21 years old, Jokic is 7 years older at 28. It feels like a lot this early into his
career. Yeah, when you do compare their age, like their career by age, or not by age, by years in the league, because Jokic got drafted in 14, stayed a year
right.
in Europe before coming over. But when you compare them by their first, like what their third season looks like each, Sengun is more on the track than you would think of being being compared to Jokic. That's really where the comparison, I feel like, is more fair than it is like, hey, just see what the guy in Denver's doing tonight? Do that. But I completely agree with Sengun being like, yeah, I'm cool with it now, but like, kind of stop calling me that in a couple years.
I want to be my own guy.
Yeah. And so, obviously, putting two MVPs and a championship and a finals MVP on him, that is a lot for any player to live up to. But right now, he is on the Nikola Jokic pace. Whether he can keep that up, that's what separates, you know, these all-stars or fringe all-stars to the future Hall of Famers.
Yeah, and it may be a lot of pressure to put that upon his shoulders to say, hey, you're going to be the next Nikola Jokic. But I would much rather that be the conversation than anything else. Like, if we're talking
Jalen
about...
Jalen Green would love to be called Jalen... baby someone.
If we were talking about Jalen Green as like
baby Kobe. Jordan,
if he was baby ants right now, we'd be like over the moon.
There's like 2 years of difference between them.
Okay, well, I mean, I'd still take it.
Younger
would you not,
brother
Sean?
Ants.
No, I'd take it over baby Jordan Clarkson. I'd for sure take that. For sure take that. Hey, Jalen Green played well last night.
He did. That kind of disproves your theory because, well, actually, no, it doesn't. We're not talking about it. So, actually, your theory is still dead on.
Well, Jalen Green only performed games where you do not talk about it.
Where you do not talk about it, and we haven't talked about it today. So, you're actually dead on. All right. When we get back here on the Bullpen, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5, it's time for the debut of Johnny Bellmer, Mount Rushmore Plus One. The award-winning, groundbreaking, sports landscape-changing Mount Rushmore Plus One with the Bullpen returns on ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5 on Twitch. Oh, it's you people.
What do you mean, you people?
What do you mean, you people?
Huh?
Throughout the course of human history, singular moments have shaped who we are, who we'll become, and even the world as we know it. Some men discovered new worlds.
It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
One man advocated for the need to hire a contractor.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
Others put pizza on a bagel.
When pizza's on a bagel, you can eat pizza anytime.
These courageous men gazed upon the monument and asked, what if we added one more? This is Mount Rushmore Plus One.
It is time for Mount Rushmore Plus One here on ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5. Houston, you're welcome. Sean, Andrew, myself, Brian McDonald, and our man, the returning Johnny Bellmer, will have Mount Rushmore Plus One list for you today to... I think this brightens people's weekends. They're driving around the car. Maybe their Saturday hadn't gone off to the best start. Maybe, yeah. I don't know what's going on in your life, but maybe it didn't get off to a great start. You hear Mount Rushmore Plus One, I think it lifts spirits.
Brightens my day, at least.
Sean, brighten our day. Why don't you lead off?
Oh, I'm leading off?
Well, you don't have
to. He just threw that on him just like that.
Okay.
I thought the rookie had to lead off.
Should we have Johnny?
That's what we did last week.
That's true. Yes, we did with Cam. No, I think, well, it doesn't matter. Cam would second, but Johnny Bellmer. your debut in Mount Rushmore.
You want me to go first?
Yeah, why not?
Oh, no.
Yeah, no pressure,
sink
John.
Sink or swim.
Okay, yeah.
Sink or swim. Like don't,
hey, Yudoka. Hey, just think of this. The success of the segment is riding upon your list.
Oh,
but no
that
pressure.
Didn't help.
No. Thank you, Mac. Lead off is kind of the...
I mean, it's the most important spot. I mean, you're the Jose Altuve of the segment right now.
Oh, well, that I mean, that helps a little bit.
Okay.
That helps a little bit. So last week, a guy named Zachary Scott was arrested at the John F. Kennedy Airport trying to smuggle cocaine inside of bags of frozen shrimp. So this has inspired...
He got caught?
Yeah, he did get caught.
That seems like a good plan. I don't know.
This has inspired my Mount Rushmore Plus One of my top five foods that could possibly benefit from somebody smuggling cocaine inside of it.
Already off to a good start.
This is a great start.
Yeah. Well, so this is about improving the food.
In a way, or improving the experience you get when you eat the food.
Okay.
So I consume cocaine, and then the food is better.
No, the food.
The cocaine is in the food.
Yeah. Yeah. Somebody smuggled the drugs in the food.
Yeah. Okay.
Number five, I would say breakfast cereals. Get that kick in the morning instead of sugar. There you go. On your way to work.
Meal of the day.
Who needs coffee? I've got cocaine in my cereal.
Different kind of.
You
want to
be productive that day. This is how you do it. My number two is movie theater popcorn. I struggle to stay awake in movie theaters. I feel like if somebody was smuggling cocaine in the movie theater popcorn, and then we were cooking it and eating it, I think I'd be able to stay up for the movie.
Popcorn's already pretty good though. I don't feel like it needs an improvement.
You wouldn't taste it. You would just experience the movie.
Wait, are you speaking from experience?
No.
Okay.
It'd be hard to sit still through the movie.
Yeah.
You should be shouting out randomly.
Yeah, you could be watching Oppenheimer.
Also, I think you'd probably remember every detail of the movie.
Probably.
My number three is within Thanksgiving turkeys. Somebody was smuggling cocaine within that. I think the get-togethers, the family dinner on Thanksgiving night would be 10 times better.
Turducane.
There you go. Number two, I've got within the funnel cakes or turkey legs at a theme park.
Ooh, I like the funnel cake.
You could also probably get through an airport with it on funnel cake. Cause
that's true.
Yeah,
that's
true. It looks the part.
That's
true. Profiling.
I feel like you would go on every single ride at the park on that specific day. And then this number one for me is personal, right? I'm a guy who likes a buffet. Oh. My number one is within the desserts. At the end of a really good buffet. So you eat your food, then you get dessert, then you get that extra win, you can go get a couple extra plates.
Helps with the food.
Wow.
There you go. There you go.
Helps you get the most bang for your buck at the buffet.
Go back for more.
I think that was a pretty good debut there from Johnny Two Jobs.
That was a good one.
That was a very good job, John. You live up to the Jose Altuve moniker I put on you at the beginning of the
segment. That was a lead-off home.
Oh, there
all
we
right.
Go.
Now that we talked about cocaine, who wants to go second?
I can go second.
You go second? Okay.
Yeah, I just objected to going first.
Sean's like, I can follow that up.
Did you take that as an insult?
I just thought we had a structure.
You know what? Fine. I'll go next.
You're the main event now, Sean.
You're the main event now. Hey, you want to be the star? We'll put you in the main event.
Okay. Yeah. What is society without rules?
You're the host.
Come on now. All right. You know what? I'll go second here. So these are, as Sean knows, he is sports entertainment, Sean. Tonight is the annual WWE Royal Rumble.
This is a wrestling list, isn't it?
No, well, it's a wrestling theme, but not a wrestling list.
Okay.
So in the Royal Rumble, to advance, you have to throw your competitors over the top rope. So, you know, this is a list of things I like to metaphorically throw over the top rope and eliminate from my life or society or my working day, whatever it happens to be. Some of these are sports, some of these are individual people, and it goes on from there. Number one on the list, batting eye conversation. I hope we could throw batting eye conversation over the top rope and never talk it about again here on Sports Talk
Radio. You never
Radio.
Talk about it when it's going well.
It's only
2017, 2022, didn't have a lot of batting eye
talk. No, it wasn't a lot of batting eye talk. It's only when you're losing every single important game at home and getting swept by the Royals and the A's. Number two, first place schedule talk. I look, the Texans have a long offseason in front of them. We're going to hear so much, but they got a first place schedule now. It's going to be we know it's harder. Great. Let's find another talking point. Third on the list, this is going into video games. Video game microtransactions. With like Madden and 2K and all. It just like, give me the game with, like, especially now, sometimes people are putting out games now. They'll admit right up front, this is not finished. And they'll just keep adding to it with microtransactions.
Yeah, here's $60 worth of DLC content that should have been available day one.
Yeah, it's just so frustrating. Third on this list, and this is not necessarily just him, although he has blocked me on Twitter, but more so all the people like him. Blame the ref guys and their king, Ben DeBose. I would like to throw over the top rope and never hear from again.
I think you can get him over the rope.
I think I can. He's he doesn't strike me as a very big guy. And the last one I thought of, because I came into work today and I saw a person doing this for seemingly no reason. And this is even worse when they're when you're in like a crowded parking lot, like at a grocery store or some place where there's not a lot of room or multiple cars coming down the same aisle at the same time. People, when it is, there's a lot of cars and people waiting, you decide to back in.
Yep. Yep.
Just pull through or find a spot. It's not that hard to back out of a parking spot, especially when you're in like a little sedan.
Yep.
Or if you're a truck, have the decency to go to the end of the parking lot. You chose to have the truck go to the end of the parking lot.
What happens if you got to leave quick?
What are you, robbing a bank?
You never know.
How
never
long
know.
Does it take to back out of a parking spot?
Longer than it takes to drive straight out of it.
Marginally. So, yeah, those are the things I would like to throw over the top rope of life and never hear from again.
That was good. I mean, you won me over with the last one. I cannot stand it.
Andrew, you're up next. Yeah, Sean is going last.
Yeah, so Sean's the cleanup hitter. He's the Yordan Alvarez of this team.
He demanded the spotlight. We're going to
give it to him. I demanded not first. Okay, Andrew, go.
Oh, so now Sean's calling the shots.
I could stammer and complain for a while. I'm cutting myself off.
Okay, fair enough. All right, so B-Mac mentioned this earlier, and it's not as like I had a real plan for Mount Rushmore Plus One coming into the show, so I figured I'd fill it out with this as the show went along. And this is phrases I would have used to call someone crazy if they had told me the Texans would be top 10 in Super Bowl odds heading into the 24-25 NFL season. So the first phrase I would have used someone call someone crazy: what are the names of your imaginary friends? I didn't watch Foster's Imaginary Friends growing up, so if one of you guys did and could contribute with some of the names that they used, I think Blue was one of them.
Blue.
I have never even heard of that show.
No. There's one that Wilt Chamberlain's estate could sue because they took a lot of likeness from Wilt Chamberlain.
Number two of the phrases I would have used to call someone crazy: you're a few fries short of a Happy Meal, aren't you, Cal? And maybe that's a little shot at Cal McNair getting a Happy Meal, but, you know, just not quite all there.
Thankfully, Hannah, not a few fries short.
Thankfully, Hannah, very sharp. Very, very sharp. Number three, and this is probably the most important one: what do you lace your weed with? Because, I mean, that's something that I personally just need to know so that I can enter whatever state that you are in.
Is that something you asked BK a few times?
No, I think BK is more of a straight shooter. He doesn't strike me as someone who's lacing his things. Number four, I'm surprised you don't have some squirrels following you around. That's a little.
That one's for the family.
That was very family friendly. After the weed joke, you got to be family friendly. And then last but not least, this one might be even cornier: give me the lowdown on your next plot to foil the Batman.
In case you're talking to the Joker.
Yes.
Well done.
Very, very corny. Well done. Very, very corny. There.
That
very
one
corny.
Took me a second. Yeah. For sure.
It did. Yeah, a little bit. There's a momentary second that was like, oh, okay. Yeah, I'm with you now. Sean, main event, Sean Mace.
The main event.
It's better be
what
good.
You got?
This is my Mount Rushmore plus one of the people that would last the longest in a ESPN 97.5 Royal Rumble.
Oh, sports entertainment, Sean.
I came in with this. This, it worked beautifully. It was almost
You're living
like,
up to the moniker. Yes!
Thank you. A certain disgraced runner of a wrestling operation would be proud of the storyline that's been built out through this segment. I will not say his name. But you know.
He
Google
who
it.
Should not be named.
Google
yes.
Coming in fit, and this will be in order of
okay.
There will be a
order
champion
of elimination.
Yes.
Okay, gotcha.
Paul Gallant. I can see lasting a while.
Have some words.
I can see Paul Gallant lasting a while until he gets thrown over the top rope by Josh Beard. Because Josh Beard has a reason to be upset at Paul Gallant. Andrew, you know what I'm talking
about.
Yeah,
Paul Gallant assaulted Josh Beard.
Hold on, I'm hearing the story for the first time.
Yes.
He went and scratched him in the eye during a commercial break of the Paul Gallant show.
Paul tried to tip Josh's hat off his head, and in the process, gave him a Draymond Green ring finger straight to the eye as he was trying to flip
Why
off
Why would
his
you
head.
Flip someone's hat coming up? No, people are listening to the radio.
He was going up. He was going up.
I just did the motion to be dramatic.
Yeah, I was like, why would you do it like that?
A cat paw at him. Cat guy, Paul Gallant.
Yeah, cat guy.
So, yes, I have Josh Beard, you know. That underlying storyline, I think
Josh
Beard.
Of course, their storyline then goes on to WrestleMania.
Of course.
Obviously.
Probably not a headliner, though. No. Next, I have Andrew Carlson.
Oh!
Josh Beard's disappointed dad, 12-3 on ESPN 97.5, 92.5. This is more of a Josh Beard. I'm not sure about the longevity and the
stamina,
health aspect of
stamina.
The health aspect of
call him fat.
Calling him fragile.
He injures himself a lot.
That's
here,
true.
B-Mac.
He does fall down. He does fall down the
so
stairs.
So I think physical specimen Andrew Carlson can get one over on him. That is until, and everyone's like, okay, it's going to be Andrew Carlson, the face of ESPN.
He's going to point to the sign and go to WrestleMania.
The baby face of ESPN 97.5. That's until, oh my God, is that Brian McDonald's music?
Oh, with a chair?
I'm throwing Andrew out.
Yes, you're throwing Andrew out.
I'm not winning. Oh, edge of my seat. I'm number two. Damn it.
I think the wrestling know-how.
It's a wrestling thing. I can't even win it.
The wrestling know-how.
Wait, can we put a bet on who we think is going to be at the top of the list?
Yeah, sure.
Littlefinger, Lance Erline.
Close.
John Granato.
No.
I'm going to say Booker.
Oh, well, that
should have been the answer.
That should have been the
answer.
You know what? Kind of, man, okay. Should have been the answer.
But throwing me out over the top rope
and
is
getting to main is it's the winner gets
the winner
main
gets
event.
To go to yeah
oh gets to go to
the main event yeah
Joel Blank
oh
Joel Blank
okay
I think he can last a long
Stunner.
Time at the Royal Rumble. I also just the eye of the tiger, the heart of a champion. There's no B-Mac's going to be playing to the crowd, you know, woo, I threw out Andrew, and that's when, oh my God, and then maybe the ref starts looking away, and then I think
Joel eliminates me. I'm laying on the outside, disappointed,
staring
seeing
at the ceiling.
My moment I was this close for main event in WrestleMania, and Joel Blank steals it from
me. It would have been such a Cinderella story, too, just all that you've been through, I'm making up right now, and
I'm going to have words with Joel next
But
time
sometimes
I see
you
him.
Gotta subvert what the fan wants, you know?
Yeah, that's true. That's
if
that's
I've learned
good.
Anything from a disgraced WWE former commissioner.
Mount Rushmore plus one. Most people are most likely to hang out with a former disgraced. Never mind. All right, that'll do it for Mount Rushmore plus one this week. We will, of course, bring that back next week and every week. But we got one more segment left in the show before we got to end it for this week. And we will get to our worst people in sports this week and what we love from sports this week when the bullpen returns on ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN97.5.com. This is the way.
This is the way.
This is the way.
This is the Bullpen, live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Welcome back in. One final segment of the Bullpen, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5. Sean Mapes, Andrew Carlson, Brian McDonald, and John Belmer here with you. And we're going to finish the show this week, as we do every week, with our worst people in sports and what we loved in sports this week. But first, we start with the Anger Sharks. Worst person in sports this week for you, Sean, is?
Karl-Anthony Towns for scoring 62 points in a game and somehow making that an embarrassing moment of your career, getting called out by name by your coach in the post-game press conference after you lose to the Charlotte Hornets while you score 62 points. And then, not only on that same night do you have Joel Embiid go for 70, and then 4 days later you have Luka Doncic also go for 73, and you have Devin Booker go for 62. So now going for he is now the worst possible 62-point game you can have, because not only does it get immediately overshadowed, but before it got overshadowed, you also got dunked on by your coach.
Especially when you like you look at the
and you lost to a terrible team.
The team the Rockets just beat by 20 plus. I mean, you look at the scoring breakdown. It was like I can't remember exactly how much he scored in each of the first three quarters, but the fourth quarter, 4 points.
Yeah, he had like 50 in the first half.
Yeah, unbelievable. You mentioned my worst person in sports this week, Luka. Not for the 73-point game, obviously. No. He pretty good the other night. But earlier in the week, he got a fan ejected, and then in this audio you're going to hear right now, had a back and forth with reporter Tim McMahon arguing about, I guess, the validity of ejecting said fan.
I'm not going to say what he said, but I knew you were going to be the first one to put out something like that, so I just saw it, man. It's just funny. You always seem to be the first one to put some bad stuff about me.
First of all, 99% of the stuff I've written about you has been good.
I don't know.
I was sitting two rows behind us.
All right, so it was the only thing he was, that time he said something, the only thing?
That was what you reacted to.
Yeah, I was hearing the whole first half, right? Well, oh, you didn't hear anything?
He was definitely hollering.
Okay, there we go.
Acted.
But you put out something that was just the only thing. But
okay, the final straw. What was the final issue? What was the thing that?
It's not the issue. I'm just seeing you seem to be the first one to always put something bad about me. That's fine. It's all over.
Why did you ask for the fan to be ejected?
Because he was cursing me the whole first half too.
Little baby Luka there. It's you and Paul talked about this the day after, just like kind of the plague of NBA players trying to kick out fans anytime they yell at them, but then to argue with the reporter who clearly was sitting in an area where he could have heard the interactions, like, oh, no, you didn't hear this. You just hate me and write a lot of negative stuff about me. Luka has to be the worst person in sports.
It was also as they were being blown out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think if the Mavericks had blown out the Suns, this wouldn't be happening. He wouldn't care about the guy shouting about treadmills in the fourth quarter. Andrew, who is your worst person in sports this week?
My worst person in sports this week is Josh Beard.
Whoa!
Oh. And this might be a little
show
bit of friendly
show
fire
violence.
Here. And I would play the audio, but he fixes his mistake too quickly for me to want to play the audio. So he said he wanted the Rockets to trade for, wait for it, Miles Bridges.
Oh, so he's a fan of domestic violence.
Yeah, I don't know if you guys are super familiar with the actions of one Miles Bridges, but let's just say...
Not a great guy?
Not the kind of person you want on your
Would you say he's a worse person than Mikal Bridges?
Yes, I would say that he's a worse person than Mikal Bridges. And who Josh thought that Mikal Bridges was actually Miles Bridges.
Oh, okay. So he's not Art Briles' beard. He just made a mistake.
He just made a mistake. But
doesn't know ball beard.
Yes.
Yes, exactly.
But the fact that he said he wanted the Rockets to trade for Miles Bridges was enough for me to put him as my worst person.
You got your revenge on him because you beat him in my hypothetical Royal Rumble.
Exactly. Who's winning?
Well,
now
now we have to have the rubber match.
Yeah.
It's 1-1. We got to have the return match. All right. Enough with the anger, Sharks. Time to doggy paddle over to the Sea of Tranquility and talk about what we love from sports this week to close out the show. Sean, what did you love in sports this week?
There's a lot of talk about Littlefinger Lance on the station this week. Not enough talk for my liking of Littlefinger Doc Rivers and how he more or less snaked his way into the Bucks job, being a advisor to the coach that then got fired and he replaced. And here is Mike Breen talking about Doc Rivers leaving ABC for the Bucks job.
And good evening, everyone. Along with Doris Burke, Mike Breen on hand, Cassidy Hubbard with us as well. First order of business is who's available tonight. For Dallas, Kyrie Irving is out. For Phoenix, Eric Gordon is out. For ABC ESPN, Doc Rivers is out. Our dear friend has decided that life as an NBA broadcaster is way too stressful, so he's decided to opt for a less stressful job, an NBA head coach on a team that's trying to win a championship. We thank him for all his many weeks of service, and we wish him all the luck in the world.
Many weeks of
the
service.
The many weeks of service.
I like
is
that.
The best part.
Yeah, that was a good
well done by Mike Breen.
Yeah, that was a good bit of humor there from Mike Breen. And he got it in 30 seconds too. Like that's a TV professional. Yeah. You get the digs in and the news inside of 30
he
seconds.
Slipped in there that he Kyrie Irving was out.
Yeah, exactly. You got NBA news in. We're talking transactions. We're taking shots at Doc Rivers.
Former
we're talking about coaching moves. 30 seconds. He got it in. longer than, or shorter than the time it took me to talk about said work for my brain. The thing I love from sports this week, look, anytime we can dunk on Skip Bayless, it's fun because he's the kind of the clown of what we do. And Jared Goff did not miss his opportunity to take a shot when asked about from – he was on a Detroit radio show. I believe it was The Ticket up in Detroit. He was asked about bulletin board material, if he paid attention to it, and this is the response Jared Goff gave.
Hey, does bulletin board material matter to you guys at all?
It depends what it is. What do you got?
Skip Bayless, after your game, tweeted out the following.
No, I don't care about anything he says. You can stop now. That's
I love it.
No. Yeah.
No oxygen. No oxygen.
Yeah, no. Anything those guys say on daytime TV, you can skip over that.
Daytime TV Damn, blast.
This came for everybody.
I know, man.
Came for The View. Came for
Judge Judy, probably. I don't know. He came for everything.
Wendy
for,
Williams.
All My Children, all the soaps. He came
Kelly
for,
Clarkson. Yeah, we don't care about what you have to say.
Jared Goff didn't have time for any of them. So that is what I love from sports this week. Andrew, I hate you for this, but I'm going to ask the question anyway. What'd you love from sports this week?
So the University of Houston played at BYU at Provo, and I was really impressed by their home crowd.
Oh,
they had
God.
Wacky, waving, inflatable two men to distract free throw shooters. The environment seemed awesome. And, you know, it was really enjoyable to watch. But what was even better, we have the Texas BYU game in the studio. And, look, the crowd might have been good for that UH-BYU matchup. But let me tell you, when I saw the BYU student hold up the Taysom Owns Texas sign, I was like, I need to scrap whatever I have in the things we love section and put the BYU crowd in there, because to pull that out after all these years, that student probably
still hurt. That kid was 5 years old.
What makes it worse is you saw my reaction. It still hurt. I don't know how long it's
classless.
Been, but it still hurt.
Classless, if you ask me.
Provo, Utah, get bodied.
Keep killing it, Provo.
All right, that'll do it for the Bullpen, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5. Thank you for joining us. For Sean Mays, for Andrew Carlson, for John Belmer behind the glass, I am Brian McDonald, and we will be back next week.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Watch out, door.
I will not be murdered wearing a blue and white plastic cone on my head. It's positively undignified.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand-new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.